Welcome to the Friends with Fantasy Benefits Football Podcast. I'm your host, Ben Branson. I'm joined by Donnie Miller. How are you doing, Donnie?
Good. It's nice to have football back.
Yeah, it is. You know, we basically have week one in the books. We're recording this Sunday night after the Giants game. So, Donnie, we're going to be talking a little bit about waiver wire pickups and some players that you should not look to drop after poor performances in week one. But why don't you give our listeners an idea of where you can be reached on Twitter?
So it's Donnie Miller, D-O-N-N-Y, Miller, F-W-F-B.
And I can be reached at B-Brennis, F-W-F-B. Donnie, it's like you said, you know, it's nice to have football back. Why don't we tell our listeners a couple of players that they may want to attempt to target on the waiver wire going outside, going into week two. And the number one player that everyone should be looking to at least at a minimum put in a good fab bid on is Kerwin Williams, who is going to most likely be taking over as the lead back in Arizona after the David Johnson injury. Now, we don't know exactly the extent of the injury. We don't know how long he's going to be out, but there is talk of, quote-unquote, a few missed weeks at a minimum for David Johnson, and it could even potentially be half of a season. So, obviously, that is crippling to fantasy owners. So, why don't you tell them a little bit about Kerwin Williams and what you may want to spend on in terms of fab budget?
So, with Williams, I mean, you can't really replace David Johnson, but there's a lot of touches and that are opened up now with them. And looking at their schedule, they play the Colts next week, then Dallas, then San Francisco. That's a pretty good matchups for the next 3 weeks. So, and with Andre Ellington will be the backup for Kerwin Williams, but he's not a true running back. They've been trying to work him as a wide receiver and everything. So Williams should get most of the workload until David Johnson is back, and David Johnson may be out till week 9. So I would spend as much as the fab as you think, depending on if you need how bad you need a running back.
Yeah, I think that depending on how much your fab is, you're going to have to spend a decent chunk to be able to get Kerwin Williams, because it's not very often that a top-tier fantasy player goes down and that the backup is probably pretty universally unowned. Typically for the wide receivers, you own a wide receiver or two that is in the starting lineup already, and even if it's a backup, you typically own them. So it's a little bit tough to say that you're going to be able to get one of those. But for running backs, typically the top-tier handcuffs are already owned, or the player is typically so healthy that the handcuff doesn't need to be owned. So, like in this case, most people aren't owning Kerwin Williams. He's not even owned in 1% of fantasy leagues in ESPN going into today. So he's someone that you're going to want to spend a lot of fab on, and he may be someone who becomes an instant flex consideration for you depending on how much the Cardinals use him going forward. Because if they don't really utilize him for like 15 to 20 touches a game, they're going to become very one-dimensional. And considering that they only have Fitzgerald and Brown out on the outside of the numbers, and they don't have a tight end that can really do anything on the inside, they have to open the field somehow. So I feel that they will most likely give Kerwin Williams at least 20 touches a game.
And it's kind of hard to know what to expect, because he's only been in the league, this is his third year, and he only has 98 rushing attempts so far.
Yeah, I mean, he doesn't have a ton of experience in the games, and when he has played, he's done well with yards per carry, and this year he's going to be used as a returner as well. And now that he's going to be put into a feature back role, potentially they may take him out of those situations so that they don't need to utilize just Andre Ellington only. But you could see him potentially being utilized in a return game, so you may be able to get an extra touchdown or two from there if he actually ever breaks one, if he does play in the return game. So
yeah, just pick him up for the volume.
Exactly. The next player that I wanted to touch on that had a very good week one was Tariq Cohen. Eric Mackey is someone who has talked about him on this podcast in the past. He's someone who should be able to be utilized by the Bears going forward in a good amount of volume for the sole fact that they now have lost Kevin White for the third straight season in terms of being put on the IR before the season's over. They don't have a lot of other wide receiver options, considering that they lost Cameron Meredith earlier in the preseason. There's just, you know, you got Kendall Wright, who's not someone who's an overly exciting player. So Cohen is someone who's probably going to get utilized in running back plays and wide receiver plays. He's going to be a big pass catcher for them, considering they just don't have a ton of options. So what are your thoughts on Cohen going into the next few weeks? Is he someone who you could consider as a flex play?
Yeah, I wasn't real familiar with him until today, basically. So I looked up his like his draft profile and stuff. He's 5'6", and they basically compare him to Darren Sproles. He's basically impossible to tackle, and he was nicknamed the human joystick for his ability to make impossible cuts. So it's based off that and how they used him today. It sounds like they'll just use him basically as like their number two guy behind Howard. Kind of use him all over the field, try to get good matchups, kind of like how they used him today. But Jordan Howard's still the guy you want.
And do you think that since the Bears are going to be trailing in a fair amount of games this year, that he's going to get a significant amount of playing time and he may be on the field as much as Howard is? Or is this someone who you expect to see, you know, maybe 33% of the running back plays and the remaining 67% will go to Howard? Or how do you see this kind of broken down going forward?
I kind of see it as like how the Falcons use their two running backs, kind of like not 50-50, but like a 60-40, but they kind of use them both at the same time where it doesn't affect either one just because they're different players. And Cohen can be used as a slot wide receiver and as a third down back, and then Jordan Howard can still be their base running back.
All right. While we move into tight end position, there was a few tight ends that I wanted to talk about. Austin Hooper is someone who is someone I would avoid in terms of trying to make a waiver wire pickup. You know, tight end depth isn't necessarily anything that's considered important. Unless you're in a very deep league, you probably already have a tight end that you're relatively okay with using week in and week out. Hooper is someone who is on a team in the Falcons that already has a ton of other wide receiver options and running back options that it makes it tough to be able to rely on him to get consistent target share week in and week out. I mean, this week he had only two targets, but he had a big rush, a big gain in the receiving game that led to a touchdown, which was a majority of his fantasy value for the day. So it takes away from what you would like to see out of Hooper. And if he continues to have this low of a target share, he's someone I'm not really looking to touch at all this year. Would you agree?
Yeah, I mean, unless Sanu or Julio Jones or Freeman or Coleman or even Gabriel weren't playing, then there's just not enough touches for him, basically.
There is a tight end that I felt was someone that you could look to potentially pick up if you're unsatisfied with what your tight end did in week one, and that's Charles Clay. He is someone who's owned in less than 6% of leagues coming into this weekend. He had 9 targets on the day. He had 4 catches, 53 yards, and a touchdown. He's someone who's probably going to be utilized in Buffalo, considering that they don't have a ton of receiving options. And he's someone who has played with Tyrod Taylor in the past, over at least the last year plus, and he's going to keep developing that chemistry that will take time for someone like Zay Jones to develop with Tyrod Taylor. And as a result, Charles Clay is someone that I would look to try to pick up if you're unsatisfied with what your tight end did in week one. What about you, Donnie? Do you agree or do you disagree with Charles Clay?
No, just given what the Bills playmakers look like, I would think Clay becomes basically their red zone guy, given they did trade Sammy Watkins and Gillislee walked. So I would think Jordan Matthews and Zay Jones. Jordan Matthews is always hurt, and Zay Jones being a rookie, that Charles Clay could be one of the he could be just behind McCoy in touches per game, catches.
Yeah, I agree. Why don't we move into the last part of the waiver wire discussion, and that's going to be talking about some wide receivers. Jermaine Kearse is someone who I thought could hold some value after he got traded to the Jets, and he had 9 targets today. So he's someone who you could look to pick up for a potential lottery pick, considering how bad the Jets are. You may not get a lot of return on this pickup, but he is the number one pass catching option that they're going to have. And he had a decent game today, considering that they were playing a Bills team who, while they're not fantastic and they're rebuilding themselves, isn't a complete rollover on the defensive side. He still had 7 catches for 59 yards. He's someone that you could utilize on bye week fill-ins, and if he continues to keep this type of target share, he's going to be someone who's at least a worthy pickup in deep leagues.
I could see him being basically the wide receiver one for the Jets. He led the Jets in both receiving and targets this week, and he played mostly in the slot. But given that Robbie Anderson's the other wide receiver, and then Jeremy Curley's the three behind those two, it's pretty easy to expect Kearse to be at least a wide receiver two for the Jets. But in fantasy, it's not really a wide receiver that you can trust on a weekly basis.
Exactly. I mean, I wouldn't trust any Jets player at all, but someone's got to have some fantasy relevance for them. And while Bilal Powell is someone who will, and Matt Forte may, I think that at some point some receiver is going to have to stand out. I think that player is Jermaine Kearse.
Well, and they'll be losing just about every game, so they'll be throwing the ball in the second half.
Exactly. We had talked earlier about Mohamed Sanu of the Falcons. He is someone who had a decent game today. He had 6 catches for 47 yards, but having a nice consistent target share, even if you are the number 4 option in the Falcons passing game, or even the number 3, which is the best he would be able to be, he's still someone who will hold value. And I think in a deep league, he's someone that is potentially already owned at 17.1%. But if he's not, I think he's someone that you can look to have week in and week out as probably having 4 or 5 catches, maybe having like 40 yards. But in a PPR league, he's still going to be consistently able to get you 8 to 10 points, I think. And for the week, say he's able to chip in a touchdown or potentially some extra yards, then you consider that a win. Would you expect any more than that from Mohamed Sanu?
No, I would say with Sanu, he kind of has a low floor. I mean, and with Julio and Sanu, I mean Hooper, Gabriel, and the running backs, it's just he gets his targets, but it's kind of just like you're gonna get 6 or 7 points out of him, kind of consistent. You won't have very many big games unless Julio's not playing, but he's in a deeper league. He could be a flex option.
Yeah, I think in a team that's probably 14 teams or deeper, he's someone who is most likely already owned in those type of leagues. And, maybe in 14 team leagues, he's a borderline owned player, but I think he still gives you value. I think in anything deeper than that, he's going to give you value because there's just so little depth in those type of leagues. He's someone who's going to give you the value of, getting you a couple catches, getting you around 50 yards a game, because that's the way that the Falcons offense is predicated. You're going to get Coleman X amount of touches, they're going to get Freeman X amount of touches, and they're going to get Julio the ball. But when any one of those players gets shut down, or, you know, worst case scenario, there the ball does get spread around. Matt Ryan does a good job of being able to get the ball to different receivers, and the number two receiver in the Falcons offense has had value in the past, and they're going to continue to have minimal value to low end value, but in a deeper league, that's someone that can help you out. And that's what you have to be able to rely on sometimes in deeper leagues, that you have a player like that, that they're not super flashy, but that the floor is something that is a consistent floor, that you can actually rely on for like close to 10 points a week in a PPR type league. So, why don't we move on to Kenny Golladay, who had a very big showing for Detroit. There was a lot of fantasy owners who had kind of been on Golladay early in the preseason, and he's only owned in 5.3% of leagues coming into today, but he had two touchdowns, he had 69 yards, four catches. Is he someone that you're looking to pick up on and stash on your bench, or is he someone that you think is going to be able to consistently hold value coming into other weeks because Marvin Jones may not necessarily be cemented as the number two in fantasy value for wide receivers in Detroit?
Galladay's a guy that I own on a few teams, and I'd say he's on most weeks he should be a flex play going forward, just given the wide receivers in Detroit with Golden Tate, Marvin Jones, and then basically Golladay. Golladay's the only big guy, and Ebron has been a disappointment since they drafted him, so Golladay could be, it's based off the preseason in week one, it looks like he's going to be their red zone guy.
Yeah, and that's what they kind of expected Eric Ebron to be, and we'll have to see if that, you know, turns into the case in the later weeks, but through the first game, he's shown that he's able to make the catches, and obviously, he did have to wait till the fourth quarter to kind of really do a ton, but he showed that he can be reliable in the end zone, at least on one play, and Eric Ebron hasn't really done a ton to show that he can do that, so Golladay, at this point, may be able to gain the trust of the coaching staff to be able to be put into those situations. And even if he is a number three, the Lions like to run three offensive sets, and they have the personnel to be able to be a very pass-happy team because they do have Abdullah and Riddick, who are pass-catching backs. They have Ebron, they have Jones, they have Golladay, and they have Golden Tate on the offensive receiver positions. So, you know, there's a lot of pass catchers that they have there. So for the Lions, it's not completely inconceivable that they become pass-happy and Golladay is able to maintain value going through the next few weeks. Obviously, some of the matchups that they're going to have are a little bit tough. You know, the Giants have a good defense. Atlanta has a decent defense. Carolina and Minnesota both have good defenses. So we'll have to see how he actually does in the next few weeks. But, you know, Arizona is supposed to have a good defense as well, and he still did a decent job against them. So we'll have to see. Is this someone that you want to spend a few dollars on your fab for? Or is this someone that you're looking to maybe spend close to 10%? Where do you think that this fab amount would be?
I'd spend just nothing crazy, a couple dollars if he's available. And I would think in most of the more competitive leagues, he's not available. But in those couple shallower leagues, I would just drop a couple dollars on him given the schedule he has coming up, and that he could be available again if he has a bad game.
All right, why don't we move into Jacksonville, and we're going to be talking a little bit about Allen Hurns and Marquise Lee. Obviously, Allen Robinson has torn his ACL, and he's going to be out for a year. So that's a devastating blow to fantasy owners that were expecting somewhat of a comeback from him because of the down year that he had last year. But now, someone's got to be able to catch the passes in Jacksonville. And while the coaching staff doesn't want Blake Bortles to throw the ball, and obviously those obvious reasons, have been shown in the past because of how inconsistent he could be. He only had 11 completions today. They tried to run Leonard Fournette as much as they could. So where are these two wide receivers in the pecking order for you? And is this something that you want to avoid altogether until someone stands out, or is this something that you want to jump on early?
So on the deeper leagues, I'm more comfortable with Marquise Lee just because he basically was healthy last year and took the spot from Allen Hurns. But it's also hard to know since they changed coaching staffs, and Marquise Lee went catchless in this week. So it's in the deeper leagues, you might want to maybe a dollar on one of these guys, but I don't try to pick up both of them or even wait until one does break out or one does become the number one receiver. Because with Bortles, it may be a lot of games like this where they only throw the ball 10 to 15 times, 10 to 20 times, and that they just lean on Fournette mostly.
Yeah, I feel like this is a situation, it's just like you said, you kind of have to wait till someone separates themselves from the rest of the pack. It's kind of sad that, you know, that Allen Hurns' three catches led the team today, but, you know, when you only have 11 catches as a team, it's not the worst thing in the world when you have over 25% of the catch share. So it will be nice to see what happens going forward when they're actually down in games. I don't expect them to be leading like they did against Houston today in the future for many games. So if that's the case, we'll have to see what they do in catch-up. But I think that Allen Hurns is the player that is probably the more trustworthy of the two players. I understand Marquise Lee had a good year last year and probably supplanted himself as the number two there, but we've seen Allen Hurns be a touchdown guy in the past, and that Blake Bortles likes to throw to him. I think that he has a little bit more talent than Marquise Lee. I think Marquise Lee is more of the possession receiver than the person who has the ability to potentially take over for a game with one big catch. And when you're looking to put someone on the back end of your bench as a lottery pick at this point, you're probably going to be looking for someone who is able to give you a big play upside. And I think that that's earnest. Why don't we move into the last player that we're going to be talking about, and that's going to be Nelson Aguilar. He's someone who, coming into the season, certain fantasy owners valued him because of the progressions that Carson Wentz made and that the Eagles made overall as an offensive unit. And some expected that once Jordan Matthews got traded, it's because they liked Nelson Aguilar. He had a decent game today, 6 catches, 86 yards, and a touchdown. What is your thoughts on Aguilar going forward?
He's a guy to, I don't know if you want to pick him up yet, except in maybe a deeper league, but with Jeffrey and Torrey Smith on the outside for the Eagles, basically Zach Ertz, Darren Sproles, and Aguilar led the team in targets, and they did most of their damage in the middle of the field with Jeffrey and Torrey Smith basically on the outside. So it's kind of he's kind of a matchup play, and they do play Kansas City next week, so you might want to stay away for now. But if the targets are still there, he's a guy I'd pick up.
Yeah, I think given what the type of passing offense that Philadelphia may have, and the fact that they could have a decent to good running game that could open up the offensive game in terms of passing, I think that you kind of have to wait to see, but I think that Aguilar is someone who could have a good game. Now, obviously, he had a good game because he had a touchdown and a 57-yard reception on a broken play in the first quarter. But outside of that, he still had 5 catches. He still had roughly 30 yards. So he's someone who could have a good target share as a result of that. But you're going to want to keep your eye on him. I wouldn't rush to jump on him on the waiver wire right away, but he's someone that you want to keep an eye on. If he continues to maintain that target share, given that he's the number three in the offense, it would be something that you want to try to go and acquire if you still have the ability to. All right, Donnie, is there anyone else you want to talk about that we've seen play through Sunday night?
The only one that I had left was Cooper Kupp for the Rams. And basically, he had six targets for four catches, 76 yards, and a touchdown. Him and Goff have a good connection. Even in preseason, they really had a good connection. And then they brought Watkins over. So he's a guy that could be valuable in PPR leagues going forward.
Yeah, that would be something that would be helpful for a lot of fantasy owners. I think in deep leagues, if you're able to grab him, then it would be beneficial for you, because I think that the Rams offense, with the addition of Watkins and Gurley potentially having a good season, and them bringing in Sean McVay as their coach, I think that they're going to be a much better offensive team this year. Goff has taken steps forward from last year to this year. He has more experience, obviously. I think that this is a team that could be a passable offense going, and no pun intended, obviously, a passable offense in terms of fantasy production. And I think that Kupp is someone who is going to have a decent fantasy season, considering that there aren't a massive amount of options in Los Angeles. But then we'll wrap us up for this week's waiver wire section. Donnie, why don't you tell our listeners where you can be reached and what you're working on?
So it's Donnie Miller, FWFB for Twitter. And I'm going to start working on a baseball article for what team would basically be in first place if the MLB was a rotisserie league.
I can be reached on Twitter at BBrennisFWFB. I am currently on the Baseball Tuesday show with Evan Peterson and Chuck Anderson. You can find me on the Wednesday football show with Evan Peterson and Eric Mackey. And you can find me throughout the basketball offseason with Eric Mackey. From the rest of us at Friends with Fantasy Benefits, have a great football season, everyone.